So we started a series last week called With Liberty and Justice for All. And the idea behind it is that we're looking into that phrase from the Pledge of Allegiance, with liberty and justice for all. You remember that phrase? Yeah, you know that? And last week I biffed the Pledge of Allegiance. We said it out loud and then I forgot a word. You remember that? Those of you who were there, I screwed up the Pledge of Allegiance. Don't laugh at me because like I know you do those things too in terms of like have you ever had to lead the Lord's Prayer? You know what I'm saying? Like you can say the Lord's Prayer, you can pray the Lord's Prayer, but you got to lead it. Oh man, that's when it happens. That's when you screw that up. But I forgot one word last week, and it was indivisible that I forgot about. But the idea of freedom that we have here is freedom and liberty. We're going to talk about these things: the freedom to choose, the liberty, the power to act. Those are the things we're going to cover. It comes from oh my gosh, I'm actually on next week's sermon already. I've already written it. Let me see if it'll download. There we go. That's why I was like, man, this is like recapping the sermon that I'm going to do today. That's weird. Okay, so liberties that we have, we enjoy because of Jesus infusing his teachings and his principles in our lives. Like this is what we talked about last week. We were Saturday night out at the Higman's house. That Jesus' principles of liberty actually just are infused in our culture. And maybe we don't all believe in Jesus, but a lot of us, most of us, live out principles of Jesus. And so we have this liberty idea, this freedom. And while I forgot the word indivisible, maybe it's because it doesn't feel like we're indivisible now. Does it? Not a lot of unity going on these days in our country. Now, I love the United States of America. I love USA. I'm so thankful we live here. But there's a lot of tension, and we'd be lying if we said there wasn't tension. There's problems going on. So being able to discuss things that we don't agree on, maybe don't have unity on, but being able to discuss them and live within the tension, we're not very good at that anymore. We don't have the abilities to do that very well. So everything being polarized, it feels like we can't be unified on anything. And I'll be honest with you, 130,000-ish Americans have passed away in the last 4 months due to a virus, and we can't even agree on that. We're not even unified on that. And if we can't get unified around 130,000 Americans dying, then I'm not sure that we can. But we can at least get along. We can at least live within the liberty that we have, the freedom that we have to choose these things, and allow others to have the same beliefs or different beliefs. So I'll illustrate that with this. Last Thursday, I think it was, I posted this thing about, I watched the news and I saw the numbers that they put out, and I never watched the news, but I saw these numbers and I started doing math, which is a problem, you know, that I do math. I don't do math very well. And I realized something. So I posted it and I got like 3 likes, 2 shares, but 76 comments. And many of them were you commenting. And it illustrated perfectly for me exactly this. We're coming at it from different points of view, and that's okay. And here's what happened in the midst of those comments. People started to say, I see your point. What do you think about this? And it was actually a cordial conversation on Facebook. Believe it or not, it can happen. So I applaud you, those of you who made comments on that, 78 of them. That was the most commented thing I've ever posted, ever. So it was fun to watch. I actually popped a bag of popcorn. I'm like, check this out. Watch that. All right, but I did a little investigating into the Pledge of Allegiance because I don't know that much about it, but Mike Hagman is a history teacher for Licking Valley Middle School. This guy, he knows everything about American history, or if he doesn't, he goes and finds out because he's still learning. And I love that about you, Mike. So tell us a little bit about the Pledge of Allegiance and take us through that a little bit, if you would, please.
Good morning. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Mike Hagman, married to Danya. A lot of you know Danya here, and I do teach 8th grade American history. And hey, Justin, can you turn the sound down in this a little bit, because I'm echoing up here. But anyway, I teach 8th grade American history. And who doesn't love history, right? I mean, I'm going to give you a history lesson here, a little bit on the Pledge of Allegiance, but I have to give you a little bit of background on the American flag, because there's nothing worse to me as a history teacher than listen to people go on and on and on about things that aren't true and things that aren't necessarily factual when it comes to our American history. And Dave is right. You look at us today, are we indivisible, which is in the pledge? I don't know, but don't think for a second that at the beginning of our country, the people living here were indivisible. We had a lot of problems and a lot of headaches to start out with. Now, if you want to hit that first slide for me there, our country starts out pretty rough with, you know, breaking away from Great Britain. And a lot of you probably don't know, but we celebrated our nation's birthday last Saturday. I won't say my age, but I was born on the 4th of July. I graduated from high school, and 1976 was a bicentennial year, so I was obviously destined to teach history. But our country really didn't found exactly on that day, because the idea was there. We will fight a war for a year before we will actually declare independence, and then we got to win the war. And it's not until 1781 that we actually kind of win the war at that point, and then it's a couple more years later before we sign a peace treaty. And I imagine most all of you know that we lived as a nation for the first few years under the Articles of Confederation. We didn't have a constitution. We had 13 states with 14 different currencies living as a nation. So it was a rough start. And then we finally get our constitution, but our first recognized flag didn't come till about a year through the beginning of the war, and this is what we call the Betsy Ross flag. However, all of you students that think that Betsy Ross designed the first flag, most historians will say, maybe. We think Betsy Ross. We know she was a seamstress in Philadelphia, but we don't know for sure. There was a couple other people also that were producing flags. George Washington had his own flag. Go ahead and go to the next slide there. And so today we recognize the flag as pretty much what you see in the background. And it wasn't until 1942 that at that time President Roosevelt, FDR, during World War II finally passed or signed into law a universal flag code, where now we have 13 stripes to represent our 13 original states. We have, you know, white and red stripes with a blue field. Before that time, the blue field on flags would show up all over the place. The stars were arranged all different ways. Even commercial companies were putting slogans on the flag and stuff like that. So it's not till 1942 that we get a universal flag code. Even early on, they were going to add a stripe every time we added a state. For a while, we had a flag with 15 stripes on it. Now, can you imagine today a flag with 50 stripes, 50 stars, and so forth? It'd be an interesting flag. But where did the pledge come from? Now, I teach at Licking Valley, like Dave said. Every morning in our school, we start our morning with a moment of silence and a pledge. Now, there's nothing in the law that says that you have to say the pledge. And I know a lot of you sitting here are saying, well, they've taken prayer out of schools. No. I pray every morning in school. So the kids, what the Constitution has said and what the Supreme Court has said, schools cannot lead prayer. Schools, you know, can't be forced to say the pledge. Now, I am a true patriot, a true American in our country, and I believe, hey, this is a symbol of our country. I believe in our country, and I believe it should be recognized and honored. So where did the pledge come from? Well, it starts after the Civil War. Our country had been a country for well over 100 years. And after the Civil War, if you do any research on the pledge, everything you're going to find is going to point to a guy by the name of Francis Bellamy. Well, it's a few years before him that another guy that you can see here, George Batch, he's a colonel after the Civil War. And it's in 1885 when they're starting to think, you know, we got to show some unity to our nation because the Civil War is over. We're trying to bring the Confederate States back into the nation. We've got to show allegiance. So they get the idea, hey, let's have a pledge. So he comes up with this pledge right here. We give our heads, our hearts to God and our country, one language, one flag. So it was kind of adopted pretty quickly, and most school children across the nation were saying that pledge. But then a few years later, here's where we get the more recognizable pledge. So on this slide here, slide three, we get the what we call the Bellamy pledge. Now, Francis Bellamy was a socialist minister. He was following in his footsteps and kind of a Baptist preacher. And he was working for a youth companion magazine, and they wanted to celebrate, God forbid, Christopher Columbus' 400th anniversary of discovering the New World in 1892. So they wanted to come up with another pledge. So he puts pen to paper, and he comes up to with, you know, a new pledge. And you can see the pledge here. This looks a little bit more familiar. I pledge allegiance to my flag and the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. So that was widespread. At that point then, it took off, and almost all the nation was saying this pledge. The interesting thing about this pledge was it wasn't a pledge like this. And it wasn't a pledge with military people doing this. It was a pledge that when you recited the pledge, you would say, I pledge allegiance to my flag. And then at the end of the pledge, you would turn your hand under and put it to your side. So that went on for quite some time. And in 1923, because of nationalism and the fear of immigrants coming in, and they thought they were saying a pledge, and who knows, maybe the immigrants were saying a pledge to my flag, thinking of a flag from another country. So they changed the wording again. So they changed it now, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And that went on, you know, for quite a while. And then we get to World War II. And in World War II, in 1942, that's when we officially adopt a pledge in which there's, you know, an official pledge. Of course, you know what's going on in 1942 with World War II. I mean, the world's at war. So they finally adopted a pledge and decreed that it should be recited while holding your hand over your heart and military people with the salute. And of course, you know, with Nazi Germany and the fascism and so forth, this didn't seem like a suitable pledge at that time, so they got rid of that and went to what we use today. And then the final revision to the pledge comes when Dwight Eisenhower is president. At that time, we're in the Cold War. And of course, a lot of you in here know what the Cold War was. We, you know, World War II is over. Dwight Eisenhower's president. We're about to add two more states. Our flag at that time only had 48 stars. We're about to add two more states. It's the 1950s. And communism is spreading. And of course, we all know communism was a godless country. So there was this big push to change the pledge one more time and add the words under God. And that passed through Congress then in 1954. And that gives us our pledge that we have today. Now, what about the meaning of the words for the pledge? What do they mean? Now, as an eighth grade American history teacher, I do talk to my kids because we say the pledge every morning. I've had kids that are Jehovah's Witness. I've had kids that are different faiths. They're not allowed by faith to say a pledge to a flag because that, to them, that faith means that that flag represents something higher than God. So they're not allowed to say the pledge. I've had many students. A lot of times they'll stand there respectfully, not say anything, which is, you know, that's their choice. But I talk to my students that do say the pledge. I teach eighth graders. 14-year-olds, man, they don't really think a lot of times. They're too busy looking at that cute girl over there or that cute guy over there, whatever, and they're not really interested in it. So we talk a lot of times about what does the pledge mean. So let's look at the first slide here, I pledge allegiance. What does it mean? Loyalty, commitment. What's our flag represent? It represents our country. So I pledge allegiance to my country. To the flag. That's our symbol. The symbol of our country, the United States. Of the United States of America. Again, we changed it to say of the United States of America, so we recognize that flag represents our country, the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands. Most of you sitting here think we have a democracy. We do not. We have a republic. It's a democratic republic in which we go to the polls and we elect the people to represent us. That's what a republic is. They make the decisions, good, bad, or indifferent. We've got a big election year coming up this year. That's what makes us a republic. So that's where that is. That's why that's in the pledge. One nation. One nation. Now, like Dave said at the beginning, we can sit here and have all kinds of different opinions, and I'm sure we do, and that is fine. That's a great thing. We should always have difference of opinions because that makes us better, and we're not a perfect nation. We're working hard to be better. So it's good to have those other opinions and work on them, but we should agree to uphold the principles and foundation of our one nation. And, of course, under God. Under God was added. Now, again, the Supreme Court has ruled that, you know, you cannot attach church and state. And, guys, there's a good reason for that. We don't want government interfering with our faith. We should be allowed to have our faith freely, and that's what our nation was founded on. If you let government have control of our faith and force us, we could be sorry, but our nation is guided by God. I believe that firmly. We look to God for answers. We look to God for guidance, and we are a nation that believes in God, and that's a very, very important to that. Indivisible. You listen to a lot of people, they'll say invisible. My favorite president, Abraham Lincoln. He said it, and he said it true. He said, we will never be defeated from without. We will be destroyed from within. And, man, I firmly believe that. If we are indivisible, we stand united. There's nobody in the world that can take us and defeat us or change us or anything. But we have issues. And we need to come together and settle some of those petty differences that divide us and want to tear us apart. And what Dave is going to talk on, liberty, to live in a country where we can live freely. We don't have repressive restrictions from government placed on us by a king. We don't have a king. We don't have an emperor. We don't have someone that is an authoritarian ruler that can say this is how it's going to be and we lose those liberties. I love having the freedom to do the things that I want to do when I want to do them without restrictions. And what's justice? Fairness. Being reasonable. Living by the rule of law. What's justice? I always say this to my kids in class. What's fair for you may not always be fair for you. It's what's fair for the kids. We're all different. We have different needs, but being fair and reasonable. And the last thing, for all. Everybody, all humans, period, regardless. So that's the Pledge of Allegiance. Hopefully you learned something today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. People ask me fairly often, like, why do you have so many people come up on stage and say things and talk about stuff? And honestly, it's because they know more than I do. So thank you, Mike, for that presentation and giving us some understanding on that. So we're talking about today, liberty versus freedom. And I realize, like, our time is very short. So I'm not going to, I'm probably not going to say all the things I want to say. But we'll get a good understanding here of freedom versus liberty. So I just kind of I researched these two words, and And because people want to say, like, we're free. We're a free country. I can do whatever I want. Well, that's not exactly the case. And our forefathers didn't talk about freedom. They actually talked about liberty. So here's liberty. It's the power to act. You know, the word liberty has not been used that much over the last 100 years or so. It's kind of fallen out of favor in favor of freedom. We say the word freedom. But the Declaration of Independence uses the word liberty multiple times. Mike mentioned Abraham Lincoln. He's the one who started using freedom in a more official kind of way. The definitions of liberty and freedom are very similar. But the founding fathers, they were looking for liberty from a tyrannical government. And they didn't so much necessarily care about your freedom to choose between a Big Mac and a Whopper, okay? They didn't care about freedom to choose. They cared about liberty to live as you want to live. So freedom, though, is this. Freedom is the power to decide or the power to choose. Or as Janis Joplin might say, you know, freedom's just another word for nothing else to lose. Yeah, Carrie's telling me, no, don't do that. Our society now values freedom more so than liberty because we haven't understood the necessity of liberty, right? We want freedom to choose. Now that liberty has been won for most of us, we want the freedom to choose how we live our lives. I remember my sister and I, when we were little, we would get in fights. You know, because siblings do that from time to time. But mostly it was because she was older than me, trying to get me to do things that she wanted me to do. And I'd be like, we live in a free country. I don't have to. You know, you've done that. I know you have. Freedom is the power to choose and to decide, whereas liberty is the power to act on it. And here's where it gets tricky. So if we're free, if we have liberty, then why do we have laws? And shouldn't every individual just have the freedom to just do whatever they want to do and have the freedom to go about and do the things they want to do the way they want to do it? And that's called anarchy, all right? That's when things are going crazy. Most of the time, things are destroyed when there is no laws. We have an example right now in the form of Chaz. Have you heard of Chaz or CHOP? You know what I'm talking about? Out in Seattle, wasn't it? Where they just... You look it up, it's insane. And that's over with. But as soon as they developed their free country, inside our free country, they developed laws, built border walls, and kept people out. Anyway, so laws are necessary to protect the social order, to help one another. And this is where laws start to infringe on these liberties and these freedoms that we have. For instance, we had to make a law that made slavery illegal, right? But as soon as they did that, it infringed upon the liberty of the slave owners to hold slaves, right? So without rules and laws, society goes into chaos. So we got to have rules to protect the people. And we've seen this in real time with the governor's orders, right? We see this these days. Shelter in place is under the guise of protecting the people, the social order. Keep the hospitals from being overwhelmed early on, right? Remember all that. That's how they sold it to us back in March. Now, then there's some people who say, that's an infringement upon my liberty to move about, do what I want to do, hold down a job, provide for my families. Remember? People say that. All the people that work in this building, aside from basically me and Carrie, became unemployed just like that because suddenly they no longer had anything to do. They had no job. But that rule that Governor DeWine put out for our protection, for our socialization, for protecting our brothers and sisters from potential infection. What about masks? Masks are a big topic right now. You have the freedom to choose right now today in Licking County. You have the freedom to choose whether or not you wear a mask in public. Currently, the CDC recommends that mask usage is good to protect others. Currently, they've gone back and forth on that, which is why we're having trouble, I think. So, but here's the thing. My liberty to not wear a mask may be an infringement upon your liberty to not get sick. This is the thing that we're wrestling with here. It's the same thing with secondhand smoke back before we had non-smoking laws inside. Remember? Like, your freedom to smoke infringes on my freedom to not have lung cancer. So, suggestion for non-mask wearers, and it's okay, you don't have to wear a mask, but just stay 6 feet, you know, stay 6 feet. If they both work, then great. Here's another one, pulling down statues, having demonstrations, rallies, protests, that sort of thing. Where does the liberty of some group to have a voice, to say things that they need to say, where does that liberty to make a statement end, and the liberty of private and public property holders to run businesses, have nice parks, have statues and things that mean something to them, where does that begin? Again, the rule of law will infringe on individual freedoms so as to protect the social order and the rights of individuals when it's working well. And it doesn't always work well. So you might be thinking, Dave, this is our first Sunday back. Why you got to talk about all this stuff? Like, it's just like ripping open Band-Aids for us, and well, we don't want to, we talk about it on Facebook all the time. Why are we going to talk about it here? Well, here's the thing. I think it's okay to have the conversations. I think it's actually very healthy to have the conversations, and you have liberty, freedom to have these opinions, but it's when we get together and realize that we're from diverse backgrounds and opinions on all these things, we must still be able to love one another. And Jesus never said, agree with one another. He said, love one another. And the best part about it, we're going to look at the founding fathers acknowledge that God is the one who gave us these liberties. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's a fundamental difference between our country and most of the other countries is that they said in the Declaration of Independence, God gave us these rights. Most other countries will say the government gave us these rights. And when the government gives you those rights, then they can take away those rights. But when God gives you the rights, nobody can take those rights away from you. God has given you liberty. The book of Galatians is a book about liberty and freedom. And the word could be translated liberty or freedom, just kind of depending on how old your translation is. The KJV is going to say liberty every time. The ESV is going to talk about freedom. And Galatians was written in response to the Jerusalem Council. It's the first big debate where people weren't getting along. There was two factions, but they all got together in Jerusalem to come to consensus, to come to a conclusion that you are free. You are free to be a Christian without having to become a Jew first. And so Galatians is written in response to that. I want to read in chapter 5, verse 1, and then verses 13 through 15. It says, "For freedom Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to a yoke of slavery." That's verse 1. Now verse 13. "For you were called to freedom, brothers and sisters, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you are not consumed by one another." So this first thing I kind of want to highlight is this freedom from legalism. You can have freedom from legalism. For freedom, Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. Christ set us free. Why? So we could be free. That's why. Just so we could be free. But like we like to say in America, freedom isn't free. It was bought and paid for with a price. Jesus Christ paid for that freedom by dying on the cross and his burial and ultimately his resurrection, setting us free. The King James Version says, "Stand fast, therefore, on the liberty by which Christ has made us free, and do not be entangled again in a yoke of bondage." Stand fast. You know, stand firm in it. You got to hold on to it and hang on to that. Don't go back to the old ways. Don't go back to the way things were. And in particular, he's talking about righteous acts, being slaves to a righteous act. That was the big debate. You know, do we need to be circumcised so that we could buy a ticket into heaven? We kind of do that now with the sinner's prayer, don't we? Like, well, you got to say this prayer. You got to go to the altar, say this prayer, and then you got your ticket punch. You're good to go. That's it. That's all you need. We do it with certain Christian behaviors. We assume someone's salvation based on what they do or certain things they say or believe, sometimes on how they vote. I've been told that. If you don't vote for this candidate, I question your salvation. Like, seriously? Jeez. When we do those things, we don't need to go back to those righteous acts, those slaves to those things. It's called legalism. Legalism is depending on you following the law so that you can be saved. There's no freedom in that. It's binding ourselves to the grind of certain actions just to be accepted. Paul says you're free from that. You have liberty from that. Jesus died so that we could be free. It does take some work to stay in it, stand firm, hold fast in it, imply some working. We kind of have to fight from this legalistic mindset, fight that urge. Sometimes we have to fight the urge to keep on sinning too. Why not keep on sinning? Because, hey, it's free. You know, why not? We'll get to that in a second. You have to stand firm in your freedom to keep your freedom. And I love the word picture that King James gives us there. Do not be entangled again with the yoke of bondage. It's so rich. The yoke is that thing that the oxen would wear, you know, that like that wooden piece that goes over the shoulders of the oxen. So when they were pulling a cart or pulling a plow or whatever, and there's lots of straps on those things, like things going all over the place so they could manage everything. It says, do not be entangled in that yoke. It's easy to get tangled up in those things. He says, you might be tempted to put on the yoke of God's plow to try and earn and pull and struggle to gain God's affection. But all you're going to do is get tangled up in a mess. And that's what legalism does to you. It just leaves you in a mess because you're never good enough. You're never smart enough. You're never worthy enough of the love that He has for you simply because you can't do enough. And then you have the tangle of guilt that overwhelms you because I just can't live up to it. I just simply can't manage it. I keep making too many mistakes. Then you feel like your relationship with God is broken. So can you see the enormous freedom in that? Untangling that yoke of legalism. And people who are consumed with just hanging on to their salvation, you could just relax because He's got you. And Jesus died for you so that you can have freedom. Do people see you as free? When they look at you, do they think of you, that's a free person? I think oftentimes people look at Christians and go, man, they are bound up by so many no's. You know, too many things they cannot do versus the freedom that they have to live within it. We're known by the things we stand against rather than what we stand for. That's because of legalism. We're bound to these yokes that entangle us. So be free of that. Jesus has made you free. Jesus gives you liberty in it. He goes on in Galatians 5. And he works that out a little more through there, but I want to skip to verse 13. For you were called to freedom, brothers, sisters too. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word, you shall love your neighbor as you love yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you are not consumed by one another. So again, if you're free, you have freedom to make choice, but liberty to take action. And then you are free from something. Free from the law, or free from this next idea, free from sin. Free from being a slave to sin. Freedom from sin. Paul says, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh. It's like he knows human beings. All right, guys, you can do whatever you want. He knows what we're going to do. He knows what we do with our freedom. You're free. You're free to choose. You have liberty to act. But that comes with the freedom of choosing the wrong thing. It is an opportunity. And you can spin this into be a license to sin. It's a freedom from a license to sin. We can take the opportunity of freedom to please ourselves at the expense of others. thus robbing them of their freedom and their liberty. License is all about using our freedom to motivate ourselves towards sin. And if you're a slave to the law, if you're not a slave to the law or legalism, then maybe you might be a slave to license, to sin. And slaves to sin, we are not compelled to sin. Nobody's forcing us to do it. Have you ever thought about that? You don't have to sin. You don't have to. It's not something in you that makes you do it. But we get stuck in this self-destruct mode, and we keep sinning and sinning over and over. And I heard somebody say recently, humans are the only creatures who glorify our own self-destruction and call it good. Isn't that true? Like, think about that. We're the only creatures that glorify our self-destruction and call it good. Our freedom is a choice. It gives us the liberty to do the things that self-destruct us, sin, and cause destruction of others. So he says, don't use your liberty as an opportunity to destroy yourself and others, but rather use it as an opportunity to lovingly serve one another. Thinking of others. David Guzik says this is the antidote to fleshly liberty, to license. We don't get over the liberty of sin by just retreating to a mountaintop and just like being out of the limelight, not doing anything, withholding from people. Instead, we get over the license of sin by serving other people. Jesus never like sequestered himself for a long, long time. He'd go away to a quiet place to pray, but then he'd come out to serve. And he had more liberty than anybody else. He was the most free person around. He could do whatever he wanted. Paul gives us the example of Jesus' words in the second greatest commandment. It says, for the whole law is fulfilled in one word, you shall love your neighbor as you love yourself. And so we have liberty to love. Martin Luther said, if you want to know how you ought to love your neighbor, ask yourself how much you love yourself. If you were to get in trouble or danger, you'd be glad to have the love and help of all men. You do not need any book of instructions to teach you how to love your neighbor. All you have to do is look into your own heart, and it will tell you that you ought to love your neighbor as you love yourself. And I think Paul reaches right down into 2020 with these words, and he says, but if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you are not consumed by one another. Just snapping and snarling at everybody and everything like a pack of wild coyotes. That's the image that he gives us there. Wolves getting after a dead piece of meat. You've seen that, right, on TV or whatever. It's just a feeding frenzy. Isn't that where we are today? Especially in our country. I don't feel it in our church, especially after I saw that Facebook thing go back and forth so well. That was really good. I don't know how to say that any differently, but there seems to be snapping and snarling going on all around. And I have to be, I'll just be honest with you, I feel like I have to be very careful with what I say and how I say it, because I'm always going to be wrong for somebody. Maybe I need to just get over that and just be wrong. Or just disagree. We have to be careful with it. We have freedom to choose. We have liberty to act. But it's how we use our freedom and our liberties that make the difference. So are we going to be a pack of wild animals snarling at each other, devouring and ultimately consuming one another, especially our country from within, like Mike said? Or are we going to, in humility, consider others better than ourselves? We can use our freedom. We can use our liberty for the good of everybody. Now, spiritually speaking, we're free to choose. Legalism, it's a tangled mess of problems with legalism. We're free to choose license even. There's a whole other mess of license to sin. It reaps destruction. But I think we should choose liberty. Liberty then to serve one another in response to Jesus' love for us. Lovingly serve others where liberty is found. choosing to act for the sake of others, being bound only by love and grace for one another, mindful of others, not merely just thinking of ourselves, following the example of our Savior Jesus Christ, who said, love God, love others, love your neighbor as you love yourself. That is the key to freedom. And when we all behave with others in mind, then all of our liberties are enhanced. Let us pray. God, we thank you that we've been able to gather this morning and look into your word and hear things about our country, about ourselves, about your word. Give us the understanding of liberty and justice, and may we not be embarrassed or ashamed of our own liberties, but may we use our liberties to enhance other people's liberty. May we be able to serve one another and be mindful of one another so that they can experience freedom found in you. We pray this in Jesus' name.